This message comes from NPR sponsor Mattress Firm. Do you get the quality sleep you need? Mattress Firm will find you the right bed for your best rest with their wide selection of quality mattresses at every price. Get matched at Mattress Firm's Memorial Day sale. Sleep at night.
Comedy is hard, but comedy on a Zoom meeting, that is even harder. My guest today, he can fully attest to that.
They tell you to get in costumes. I was in this, like, Spirit Halloween level Kim Jong-un costume, and I was, like, mounting this gigantic green screen that's bigger than my living room in this costume on a Zoom, putting a light panel like 3 feet away, setting a chair, like deframing myself, just doing all these technical things and being guided very well by these experts and professionals. But like, I'm just gonna be pretty hardline and say that it was bad. Like the comedy suffered.
Okay.
Hey, y'all, you are listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Sam Sanders, and my guest today is Bowen Yang. Yes, that Bowen Yang, cast member on Saturday Night Live, podcaster extraordinaire, and overall lovely human being. Bowen first came to SNL in 2018 as a writer, but if you know anything about Bowen Yang, you also know it was only a matter of time before he went on stage. So it only made sense when SNL made Bowen a cast member the following year. In this chat, we'll talk more with Bowen about SNL and what it's been like for him to be the first Chinese-American on the show in front of the camera. We'll also discuss his podcast with his friend Matt Rogers. It's called Lost Culturistas. And because we can, we'll talk about our shared love of HBO's Insecure. But first, I had a very important confession for Bowen about a shared love for something else.
So, Bowen, I have so many questions for you, but I think I have to start with just a confession.
Okay.
And we don't have to go there if you don't want to, but I feel like I wouldn't be honest with you if I didn't tell you that I am currently in the midst of binge-watching Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
And what was the entry point for you? Like, how far along has this journey? Are you in this journey?
Oh my God.
I feel like I'm really close to just jumping back in and
yes.
Starting from the beginning.
Yeah, there's so much there. So I was an undergrad when it was first happening. And I recall watching maybe the first two seasons, and I was an RA in my dorm, and me and the guys in my dorm would watch it together. And it was very, like, modern man. But then I stopped watching after Izzy saved the deer. I was like, I'm out. I'm done.
Season 4.
Yes.
Premiere of season 4.
Yeah.
Yes.
But then a few weeks ago in the quarantine, Netflix was like, maybe you want to watch Grey's. And I was like, okay, yeah. And I'm currently in season 6 now. I'm like moving through it.
Wow. So 6 is the merger? Is that what's going on, maybe?
I keep hearing that's coming. It hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
I just saw the episode, spoilers ahead, listeners, where George dies.
Yeah, yeah. That's a crazy one.
I know.
That felt like, it did feel like a reset, even though they were killing off a character.
Yeah.
Yeah, spoiler. Sorry. We're spoiling
it's
this
okay.
For anybody who's waited 10 years to watch season 6. But, yeah, I fell off after, I think, I fell off after 7. Oh, no, but no, I fell off, like, right as you are about to approach the merger.
Okay.
So this is interesting.
Yeah.
We're sort of, like, you're picking up where I left off.
So I bring all this up for a reason. From my understanding, one of the characters on Grey's and actresses on Grey's was a big part of you finding your, like, path.
Yeah. It was Sandra Oh as Christina Yang.
Are you okay?
Don't ask me if I'm okay.
Okay.
Ugh, you make me sick. Have some fire. Be unstoppable. Be a force of nature. Be better than anyone here, and don't give a damn what anyone thinks. There are no teams here, no buddies. You're on your own. Be on your own.
It should have been Yang's Anatomy, if I'm being real.
It should have been Yang's Anatomy. She was someone who, I mean, I didn't identify with someone on TV that strongly, and probably still haven't. I mean, like, I was admiring her, like, ambition that was paired with, like, an unapologetic sort of stance on that ambition.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was never, like, quiet. She was never, like, submissive or passive in her desire to succeed. I thought of myself as a very goal-oriented person. The more I've aged, the more I'm like, oh, maybe I'm not that ambitious. But at the time, like, she really sort of, yeah, imprinted on me in this very powerful yeah. way.
And, like, people, I don't think, give her enough credit. Like, Grey's is, like, a soap opera.
Yes.
But she is acting the whole way through.
Oh, my God.
The whole way through.
And giving you comedy, too.
Yeah.
Sandra
yeah.
Oh was giving you comedy on that show. But, yeah, I mean, she was giving you, like, single teardrop on, you know, network television, post-scripted revival, once Desperate Housewives came on the scene in 2004. Like,
yeah.
Sandra Oh was, like, giving you the first sort of tasting menu of, like, what prestige television
yes.
would become.
Yes. Well, it's like, I'll see, like, Laura Dern having her moment now. And I'm like, I think Sandra Oh wrote that blueprint. I think she did.
Oh, my God. And now we've said it.
Yes. It's out wow. there. It's out loud. Anyways, yeah. we could do this all day, but to Bowen. Let's talk about the now and where you are in SNL.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all are getting ready for a new season. And I'm so curious yeah. about how y'all pull this off in the midst of a pandemic. How much can you tell us about how it's going to work?
I'm curious too. I mean, I'm like, it's all going to be like a Schrodinger's cat situation, even for me, where it's like, we won't know if the cat's alive or dead until we open the box. But no, I think it'll be great. I think it'll be great. And that's not like a morbid analogy. I'm just saying, like, I don't
it
know what it's going to be. Yeah. You know, I feel some confidence with the way that the show and the network are making sure everybody's safe. Everybody is taking every precautionary thing.
So y'all
thing
can go in, thing. Though?
What do you mean? Oh, yeah, yeah, we can go
okay,
in. Yeah,
okay, okay.
Yeah,
because yeah. the last episodes of the last season, everyone was at home. But
everyone
y'all
was
going
at home.
Into...
Yes.
Okay.
And it was nice because, you know, they're testing everybody pretty frequently, and it's been nice to just sort of go in and sort of gradually, like, reintroduce yourself to people. Be like, hi, oh, it's been so long.
Like,
and then,
don't
like,
hug me yet. Just does,
like, well, everyone's just doing, like, a this, like a, you know, I'm for people who are listening at home, I'm just, like, doing, like, a like an air hug
yeah, yeah.
from afar.
Yeah. So I want to talk about how much do you think of the comedy that y'all will be doing this season has to totally just speak to the pandemic, or how much of it can feel like previous seasons? I think... probably a lot of your audience wants SNL to help all of us feel more normal right now. But I also know mm-hmm. that part of the work of your show is always speaking to the absurdity of the moment. Like, sure. how are you thinking about the ratio of, like, COVID stuff and everything else?
Yeah, yeah. I feel like SNL is this kind of fixed, refractive prism.
Mm.
And whatever comes through it is just whatever's is just the absurdity of what's going on in the world, or what people are saying, or what's not being said. I think we all sort of take that seriously, and I think we're all in a place where we're excited to write. I mean, even in April, during like the true depths of the pandemic, and like I was in New York, where it just felt so dark and scary.
Yeah.
Even then, we were, you know, trying to find ways to circumvent the darkness or speak directly to the darkness. And it still felt decent. It felt like it felt meaningful in some way. And I feel like that
yeah.
if we were able to do that then under these like impossible circumstances, which was everyone's in their own houses, you're being directed over Zoom, you're being, you know, there's a gaffer on the Zoom telling you where to put your light, you know, how to wire your stuff from your own, like, living room. I'm in, like, this kind of shoeboxy place. Like, you know, if we were able to do that back then and sort of come together and have our amazing post-production team, like, put that show on in spite of all of these obstacles, I feel like
this will be a walk in the park.
It'll be, sure.
All right, coming up, the duality of Bowen Yang.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the acclaimed true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays only on Hulu.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BritBox, helping people discover a world of British TV, including new original drama Time, starring Jodie Whittaker, Tamara Lawrence, and Bella Ramsey, streaming at BritBox.com/NPR.
With the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the president is hoping to fill the seat with a conservative judge.
And evangelicals who play an important part in American politics have been waiting for this moment.
But how did evangelicals become such a powerful force?
Listen now to the history of evangelicals on the Throughline podcast from NPR.
So, in thinking about the show SNL being this like mirror that refracts, and it's gonna just have to show some of the absurdity of life right now. Like, what for you personally, as you like live your life the last few months, has been like the most absurd thing? Like for me, it's just like I found that living alone, I just have full-on conversations with myself now. I will talk to myself. I will yell at myself. Wow. I will sing to myself. And my dog is just like, who are you? What has been your most absurd thing?
Oh, but you have a dog there.
I do.
That's nice.
I would let her in, but she's a busybody.
That's okay. She's a busybody. The most absurd thing. The most absurd thing is that I used to be, this is another hardline thing, I used to be very anti-bath.
Okay.
But I take a bath like 4 times a week now, which feels excessive.
No, it's not excessive. You treat yourself.
Okay.
You treat yourself.
I know. Well, yeah. And I'm like really like researching like the right, like, first of all, so what I have now is this eczema honey bath bomb that helps with like irritated skin. And then I have, you know, the Jessica Alba bubble bath, yes, honest thing.
Yes.
And it's like, that's like my, those are my sort of tentpole things that I need for the bath. It's not absurd, but it's just like I'm really splurging on bath stuff, and then I'm splurging on like this morning I woke up at like, I set an alarm for like the Telfar drop. I was like, I'm gonna wake up at 9 and I'm gonna like buy like the new Telfar earrings. Like I'm gonna buy, like I've never been like this sort of,
yeah,
mission driven in my shopping. And so I don't know if that's absurd. I'm just like, I am like, I'm in a mode to consume as much as I can.
Yeah. You know, you can't bring up baths and have me not like really go down a long list of questions, because I've heard from several other creatives when I interview them about their bath process. Like Yvonne Orji loves her bath. She says that she talks to God in the bathtub. Like, wow. What is the average length of your bath?
Okay. It's interesting because I'll perch my iPad.
Okay.
On the rim of the bath, there's plenty
dangerous
of surface area. It's not too dangerous.
Okay.
It's not too dangerous. Okay. Because there's, I've got a large sort of you know, bar of area where I can just tilt my iPad towards me, and I'll put on. Speaking of Yvonne, I've been catching up on Insecure. I'll put on Insecure.
Oh yeah.
And then once I'm like 20 minutes into the episode, I'll be like, okay, time for me, you know, like once Issa and Molly are fighting at the grocery store, I'm like, okay, great. Yeah. Like I can.
Yeah, I got it.
Oh, and yes, of course, now I'm getting pruny, and so I'm going to leave. So yeah, so it's like 15 minutes. The top upper bound is like 20.
Okay, now my goal for you is to like, next time you're taking a long bath, you got to FaceTime with Yvonne, and y'all got to have a bathtub kiki. I'm speaking it right now into existence.
Thank you so much, Sam. I am purely a supplicant when it comes to Yvonne Orji. I don't get too, like, you know, freaked out or nervous around famous people, but for some reason, Yvonne Orji is just one of those people where I'm like, I would be too nervous to meet her.
Yeah. Well, there's something about what Issa has done with that whole show. She has created these characters that are equal parts, like, fumbling through their late 20s, early 30s, but also incredibly majestic and regal. Like, they're always dressed above their circumstance. They always look so great. And you're just like, oh, if I saw you at a party, I'd be afraid to say hi.
Exactly. They're all hanging out, like, the nicest, you know, co-working spaces I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
God, like, Condola is just, like, this, like, crazy, ravishing beauty. Yeah. I'm just, like, all of these people are, like, I would be too afraid to talk to you, which I think is how it should be, you know? Insecure has been the best escape. I watched the Coachella episode again
Oh my God.
The other night.
Natasha Rothwell on another level.
Like, Can we just say, can we just give props to Natasha?
Right there. I mean, right there. Right
incredible.
There.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And Natasha was someone who she wrote at SNL for a season. And I was when I got the job offer to write, I reached out to her and I was like, I really want, you know, it's not the same experience, of course, that you are a Black woman and I'm a gay Asian man, but what was it like working for you there? And she was like, you know, it was really nice. But, like, of course, like, you know, it was really intense. And these are the things that you should sort of be aware of going in. And I was like, great. Like, she downloaded me on all, like, the nice. The things that, like, that people should know. And I'm just forever grateful for Natasha as, like, a performer, an actor, a writer. But also grateful for her as, like, a person who, like, you know.
Yeah. She was generous.
Was kind. Yeah. Generous. Kind enough to, like, let me know. You know, how to, like, emotionally prepare for this really intense, demanding job. And, gosh, I owe a lot to her.
She's
I
love great.
Her.
You know, hearing you talk about her helping you out when you came on, there has mm-hmm. been so much discussed about that show and diversity. And to hear you say that...
Disgust, D-I-S-C-U... S-S-E-D, not disgust.
Oh, disgust. D-I-S-G-U-S-D. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, yes,
yes. Yes, yes.
Good catch.
Perfect.
But, like...
It's been disgusting.
It's been disgusting. I guess what I'm getting at is, like... there was still a need for you to ask another person of color, what's it going to be like? What should I prepare for? Uh-huh. And so, like, what does that say about where you think the show is in terms of just being a more welcoming environment for people who aren't, you know,
sure.
the white guys.
Well, I was just asking her as a way that wasn't even specific okay. to SNL.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like this is a thing now where in any place of work, it's like you kind of, there is this kind of emotional shorthand amongst people who don't fit into a... whatever, like mental model of what that job
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
Everyone's being very honest, I think, and transparent about how things work there, which I think is great. I mean, I was kind of surprised to go into SNL and sort of be just genuinely surprised and comforted by internally, like just going in and seeing like, oh, there are Asians in every department. There are people of color in every department. We've had this like legacy of queer writers who've been at the show since its beginning.
Oh, yeah. I feel like, you know, so much of you moving from writing to being on camera, like so many of those sketches just popped right away seeing you. But I think a lot of people, a lot of straight people, glommed on to sketches that leaned into you being Asian, you know, you playing Andrew Yang or Kim Jong-un. But I was most impressed by, and what I found to be the most subversive, was the gay stuff. And
I mean, like
having Emma Stone play an actress who gets cheated on in gay porn.
I played the woman who gets cheated on in the gay porn.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to ask you about my line, if you have a moment. I open the door and I say, Jared, what are you doing? Not with my godson. Like that?
Or the Sara Lee stuff.
Since we flagged some activity on the account that's been a little off message.
Oh, I don't think so.
Well, for example, why did Sara Lee comment on this picture of Nick Jonas saying, wreck me, daddy?
Like, that for me was something that was harder to pull off and even more valuable when it worked. I mean, having a conversation about poppers in a comedic sketch that straight people understand, come on. That is like, that was really smart. And so, I don't know. How do you navigate not a competition, but there's a duality mm-hmm. of identity that you bring to the show.
Sure.
And how do you think you navigate that? Or does one take precedence and does that change over time?
It's this thing that, I mean, both of those things are, for anyone watching at home, it feels like they've snuck on in some way, or it feels there's some like novelty aspect to like any time there would be, you know, there is like an Asian element to a sketch, or there is a queer element to a sketch, and I feel like I don't know. Like, I think I'm still kind of in this place where I'm like, am I sort of limiting my scope with what I'm capable of doing? But I feel like I'm a firm believer in just sort of repetition and building reps in the literal sense of like, the more you see this, the more you'll get used to it. At this point, I'm just like, oh, like, I would love for there to just be a normal mid-frequency response to you seeing an audience that watches SNL seeing like a queer Asian person on camera being queer and Asian.
Yeah.
Without digging into the politics behind, well, that's all they can do. Like, that's all Bowen does is be queer and Asian. Or in the same way that you don't sort of remark on the fact that a straight white cis cast member would come on and that you don't assign those descriptors onto them in their performance. So it's like, I kind of want to, like, I don't know, volley on as much of this as possible in my short time here just to make it... I was talking to Ego Wodum about this, my castmate, and she was like, I just want to make this easier for the next black woman. I was like, oh my god, yeah. And I was like, I kind of don't really care about how my tenure on the show is perceived in any particular way, other than the fact that I want this to facilitate something better for the next person. Like, that's kind of like the only duty I'm bound to at the show at this point.
I love that.
Listeners, stay with us. We ask and answer a very complex question. What is the culture that made you say culture is for you? It'll make sense later. Trust me. Stay with us.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Grammarly. Today, people are working to innovate and do more in their workdays, but coming up with fresh ideas and quick responses can be tough. Introducing Grammarly Go, a product offering personalized generative AI communication assistance that will change the way you write. With just a few clicks, Grammarly Go can ideate, compose, and rewrite thoughtfully, accelerating your productivity and unlocking your creativity. Go to grammarly.com/go.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
There are these networks of staunchly pro-gun groups on Facebook. And one of them is run by these three brothers, the Door Brothers. But it turns out, they don't just do guns. The Door family name has been attached to other causes.
Their goal is to eliminate public education and to replace it with Christian schooling.
The Roots of the Door Family on the No Compromise podcast from NPR.
What's been the biggest difference in the reaction to sketches based on those that lean into being Asian or those that lean into being gay? They're all dealing with difference, but like, is there generally a certain kind of response to the Asian sketches that is different than that for the gay sketches?
I would say maybe I haven't had enough turns at bat yet. Is that the right terminology?
That works.
Yeah, I probably have to gather a little bit more. I have to get a bigger sample size, but I don't know.
I ask that because I'm wondering if there are any, concerned Asian viewers who are like, well, when you play that character, that was bad
for
us.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Do you hear that?
Yeah, maybe. I every now and then, yeah. And I completely understand that point of view. Because
do you agree with that?
Sure. On some level, yeah. And I sort of go into these moments of reflection where I'm like, what am I upholding about Asianness? But then that also gets sort of balanced out by this idea that like there is no like monolith Asian thing.
Billions of people. Literally billions of people.
Billions of people, so many American people, and like, Asian Americans have the widest income gap within a racial group. And it's like, no one person should be saddled with that responsibility to like speak for an entire group of people in that way. And then whenever I do sort of receive this feedback that you're not giving us a nuanced portrayal of an Asian person, I think, well, it's a sketch show. And like I hear
literally comedy.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like it's going to be this not caricaturish version of what's real, but a heightened version of what's real in terms of the some dials being turned all the way up, others turned all the way down.
Yeah, yeah. I do think, you know, it's like when you think of scrutiny from other Asians on you doing Asian things on the show, I'm guessing part of the scrutiny from that group, if it comes, is also this, like, what I find happens is when there's anything of marginalized status that feels like a first, everyone from that group, we unload all of our hopes and our dreams onto that first. And all of a sudden, that first has to do so much more than just their job. It's, is Bowen doing this, that for the entire industry, for the entire group, for the entire this, for the entire that?
Sure.
Do you feel that kind of pressure? And if so, how do you fight it?
I feel like I felt it less and less. I did feel it very much so in the beginning. And that was something that, was just literally mentally overwhelming. I feel like there's this discussion now amongst Asian people, especially after the release of this book called Minor Feelings by Kathy Park Hong. I recommend everyone read it. Minor Feelings, An Asian American Reckoning. And she talks about how there's this like sense that like you would be in a space that is supposedly like egalitarian in terms of like your identities.
I see you.
But then you would clock the other Asian people in the room and be like, I see you, but in a way that is for some reason adversarial.
Oh, listen.
That is for some reason.
Girl, like, I know. I know. There have been so many spaces where you walk into the room thinking you're going to be the only black and accepting wholeheartedly the benefits, privileges, and deficits that brings. Then you see another one and you're like, this screws up my calculus. I had prepared for how to be in this room as the only. It's weird now. I get it. Anyways, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, then, because so then, like, you know, you realize that, like, that person becomes a reference point. You're, like, aware that you've become this new sort of reference point for them in their, in their calculation. But I feel like, you know, like, where does that come from? And, like, there's this, and this is just the extreme sort of way to put this, but she talks about how we have been programmed to very easily succumb to racial self-hatred, which is to see yourself the way that white people see you, which to be like, is to be like, ugh, that Asian person is checking these stereotypical boxes, and isn't that so disappointing? But it's like, but wait a minute, you're just kind of framing this in some oppressive frame, you know? It's so I feel like, I'm not saying that I'm like, I'm victim to that, or that's like what people are sort of putting on me, because I, for the most part, I do feel very sort of lucky and understood. But I think we're starting to work our way out of that default mode of thinking.
Oh, yeah. And I think part of it comes out of this like innate sense of scarcity and scarce resources. So I'm in this space that's majority white and I've carved out this space for me as the black or the Asian or the gay, I better be really careful when another one of those steps up because they might get my slice of the pie because it took me so long to get my slice and I'll be damned if I lose my slice. And I think what has to happen in our careers and in our hearts is this reset. Like, it's not just about a pie. It's about the kitchen. It's about,
oh my God,
it is about, you know, the farm-to-table pipeline. There's a whole universe, you know? And it's like, how do we as creatives of color, you know, say, okay, I see you other Asian, I see you other black, I see you other whatever. Come on, let's go farm some food together. Let's go make more food. This is a horribly realized metaphor, analogy, or whatever.
This is an even worse realized metaphor, which is, it used to be that you'd see a gay, for me, you would see another gay person at a wedding and you'd be like, damn it. But now I've evolved to a place where I'm like, I see another gay guy at a wedding. I'm like, great. Like, there's at least two, like, moderately skilled dancers here at this wedding. So there you go.
How can we come together?
Yes, at the wedding. At the wedding. In the kitchen.
In the kitchen. So Bowen, I want to talk a little bit about your podcast, if that's cool, just because I love it. And like,
think so.
You know, like I had this long period where it's like when you make a podcast, you can't listen to any other ones. But in the midst of quarantine, yes. I have to listen. You know what I'm saying?
I know.
But now, yeah. Something about this quarantine moment, it's like I need it. And so my three every week are Las Culturistas.
No way.
The Read.
The Read.
And Who Weekly.
Oh, my God. I'm honored to those be among those. Those are my three. Wow. That's really
well,
nice,
well, you know, my
Sam.
Secret dream is all of y'all just get together for, like, a freaking Avengers Endgame podcast event.
Oh, I would love that. I feel like Crystal and Kid Fury are, like, just, like, too cool for
well,
school.
Well, they have that whole just, like, insecure, majestic vibe. I'm just like, am I cool enough to hang around y'all? I don't know.
Yes. Totally. Totally. And then, oh, my God. And yeah, and Who Weekly. I love Who Weekly.
Yeah, yeah. I want to unpack a little bit of the conceit of the show for those who haven't heard it yet so they can start listening, too. Yes. But I also want to just, I keep squatting, and I just kicked out another leg.
No, that's okay.
My legs are so asleep. Gay men can't just sit straight. We can't just sit still. You gotta move. You got to fidget. Oh,
you got to lean.
Yes.
Your center of gravity is in your ankle sometimes. Yeah.
Exactly. You get it.
Yeah, I get it.
I love the way that y'all unpack culture, capital C, rules of culture, the moment culture was culture for you. Like, how do we explain to non-listeners mm-hmm. what you're doing with the idea of big C culture?
Sure, totally. With big C culture, we're just kind of making it just aggressively frivolous. It's just, I mean, there's nothing too important. There's nothing not important enough. There's, which is not to say that, like, if everything's culture, then nothing is, but it's just to say that there's no, like, concern for what's highbrow, what's lowbrow. It's all part of the conversation.
Well, y'all also do this thing that I love, where y'all just be talking, and y'all talk uh-huh. across a thing that you like, and then all of a sudden, Matt or you were like, and that's a rule of culture. And all of a sudden, it's a rule of culture. And I'm like, yeah, that's a rule of culture.
Look, please. You have a little bit done over the years, so you look like yourself always.
Absolutely. There you go. And that's how you get the cast of Real Housewives of Insert City here.
There. Yes, exactly. Sure. Also, if you look like you've had work done, it didn't work.
That didn't work. Honestly,
that's a rule of culture.
That's a rule of culture.
Number four.
If you look like you've had work done, it didn't work.
It is this very determined, not a labeling, but you're saying that, like, all of this can be respected. All of this can be important. Here it is, baby. Lick it up.
Sure. Yeah. Sure, lick it up. Lick it up. Yeah. It's just, again, I'll say the word. It's frivolous. It's silly. And then we bring on guests, and then we ask them, like, what are the culturally impactful moments from your life, from your upbringing.
You don't say it like that. Y'all say, wait, when did you know that? Wait, what was the culture that made you know that culture was for you? Or how do you do it?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Well, what is the culture? You know, you got it. That's perfect. What is the culture that made you say culture is for you? Yeah. Which just kind of asks, like, what was something that put you into a culturally minded direction? And so it's, I mean, the answers are always so interesting. They reveal so much about the person. You know, that the way that people invite us in is so nice. Yeah. And I can't believe I kind of feel like that's the luckiest thing that I've, like, fallen into, quote unquote, in my life, is that, like, these people just, like, think that what I have to say is, like, fun. I don't know.
Well, you know what it is? You always finish the bit. Y'all commit. Like, I'm thinking back to, like, the top 200 moments of culture that y'all did. Yeah, when I began to listen, yeah, I was like, they're not going to finish this.
and then 6 hours later.
And you did. And it took me half of a cross-country road trip to finish those episodes, but I did. And I was like, they did
wow.
it. What was the number one? What was the number one?
It was Adele Dazeem. Yeah. Adele Dazeem was the number one moment in culture history. All culture history. And it beat out Jonas Salk inventing the polio vaccine. It beat out everything.
If you're on everything. How much in advance did y'all say number one is going to be Adele Dazeem? Or was it, like, on the fly?
It was, we knew from the jump that number one was Adele Dazeem.
Stop.
And then what's dumb is that we worked our way backwards. I mean, there's so much that's happened since we've published that list. And what, like, 2 months ago that we're like, maybe we have to come out with a new one. Because, like, we missed, like, you know, WAP, and we missed, you know, Gaga's performance at the VMAs. We've missed so many things.
I missed that performance. So it's fine. I will say Normani in WAP.
Oh my God.
It's a real cultural moment of WAP. We forget that, like, Normani was the only one actually doing choreo in that video.
Thank you. Because Cardi and Megan weren't.
They're like a little, you know, Tina from Bob Burgers twerking, but like Normani is getting it. And like, yes. Yeah, if they're...
And the houndstooth in the yes. beret. Oh, yes. Such a good look.
In yeah. this vein, I have to ask you, what is the culture that made you know that culture was for you? And this answer, you've answered it before, but yeah. It could be whatever you want it to be today.
Right, because it's very dynamic, and the answer always changes for me and for everyone, I think. But for me right now, to answer your question, the culture that made me say culture is for me is, I mean, I could say Grey's Anatomy to make it full circle, but I could also say, I mean, it's Celine Dion, probably, growing up in Montreal, like, you know, Celine just like kind of like lit something up in me. And then Celine was also like, she did this concert special on TV one year when I was a kid where she brought in Elton John. And then that was when I was introduced to Elton John. And like, he was just this man on the piano with all these kooky glasses. And I was like, when I grow up, I want to have a lot of glasses. You know, like she was like the portal that opened. She was the gateway drug into this other stuff. And so
Celine Dion is probably the gateway drug for a lot of gay men.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, love her.
Love her.
Celine to end this chat, Sandra Oh to open it. What a beautiful conversation.
Beautiful, Sam, and you facilitated the whole thing.
Thanks again to Bowen Yang. You can catch him on SNL. The premiere of SNL's newest season is this weekend. Also, trying a new thing with the interviews these days. Y'all, if you want to see me talk to Bowen and see Bowen talk to me, there is an extended video cut of this conversation. It is on our YouTube page, the NPR YouTube page, youtube.com/NPR. You can see all of Bowen Yang's cool wall art. And you can also see how my wall in this video is totally blank. No art, no nothing. Listeners, send me suggestions and hyperlinks for wall art. Thank you. Last thing, we're back Friday with another episode. And those Friday episodes, they usually include you. We always, every week, want to hear from our listeners sharing the best things that have happened to them all week. Just record yourself on your phone and send the file to me via email to samsanders@npr.org. All right. Thank you for listening. Till next time, stay safe. We will talk soon.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. This message comes from NPR sponsor, Osea. Their Mega Moisture Duo features two of their clean, vegan bestsellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com.
I'm Miles Parks. I cover voting and election security for NPR. Across the NPR network, we report rigorously on the forces seeking to disrupt democracy and provide communities with reliable information. It's Public Media Giving Days, the perfect time to stand with the facts by donating now at donate.npr.org. Thank you.